Friday, Saturday, and Sundays until November 11th at the Milagros Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It's right before 11 o'clock. At 11:30, Art Focus interviews art critic Jeff Yarn about his new essay, Portland Ageddon. And coming up next is Stage and Studio. Stage and Studio talks to the producing creative director of Milagro Theater about the lineup for their 35th season. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and PD Expendables Stage and Studio Supplies. PD Expendables specializes in sales and rentals for film, photo, and theater productions, featuring lighting, paint, grip tools, and more. More information by phone at 503-887-5880, online at pdexpendables.com. And now, Stage and Studio.
Well, it's that time of year, the Day of the Dead celebrations. We're listening to music right now from Milagro's current show, which we're going to talk about. And it's music, original music by Luis Guerra, and it's called Crossing Over. I want to welcome you all to the on-location edition of Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts. With me in my office studio is Roy Araúz, producing creative director of Milagro Theater. Thanks for joining me here today, Roy.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
It's so great to have you here. Well, it wouldn't be October without Milagro's original Day of the Dead productions, and Milagro Theater kicked off their 35th season with the world premiere of Alebrijes, hope I'm saying that right, we'll find out, a Dia de Muerto tale, written and directed by Georgina H.L. Escobar. It's the 23rd Dia de Muertos celebration production at Milagro Theater. How did opening weekend go?
Opening was a huge success. We actually, we've been working towards this for 3 weeks, and I was there Friday night for opening, and the audience just loved the show. It was quite a success, quite a hit. Had lots of everybody afterwards talking about how much they really loved it and the story and the visuals of the show.
Well, if anybody wants to take a look at the visuals right now, you can go to stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio, where I have some pictures up and you can follow along. We're going to talk more about that. Well, you know, Alebrijes is about a young bride and groom-to-be, and they discover the largest Day of the Dead altar they've ever seen, and things go wrong when a little creature known as...
Alebrijes.
And this creature takes them on a little journey. And that journey is what the whole story is about. You want to tell us more about that?
Absolutely. So basically, the story is, it's a fictionalized account of how Pedro Linares, the artist, came up with the Alebrijes. And the way it's framed, the way we are brought into the story, is in the present day. So we're in the present day Mexico, and a couple goes into a house, and I don't want to give too much away because there's a lot of little surprises throughout, but through twists and turns, we end up being transported back in time. So they're in the presence of this big altar, and from there, they get introduced to Pedro Linares, and his alebrijes start appearing, and again, we are transported back in time to 1930s Mexico City, and what used to be called the Distrito Federal. And then we see, again, a fictionalized, highly fictionalized account of how he came up with the alebrijes, with the creatures. And then we end up back in the present and all the lessons that are learned.
So you have the actual historical figure of Pedro Linares?
Again, a highly fictionalized
version. Oh, highly fictionalized version. Okay.
Yeah, because if you do a search for Google search or start to go to library, there are many stories. There is no one set story of Pedro Linares. Even he changed his story over how this happened, what year it really happened. So there's no real idea. There's no real focus on exactly what happened. Some historians have this happening in the 1930s. Some historians have it happening in the 50s. So it really is unclear. And so what Georgina has done is she elevated the story. She elevated his story and created this mystical, magical environment and device to sort of tell the story. And so the actual figure of Pedro Linares is in the show, but everything else surrounding it is, again, highly fictionalized. What we know, for example, is that he was very ill. He got very ill, and he developed a fever, and he was dying. And in this process, when he was having those fever dreams, he saw these creatures, these weird creatures that were the ones who guided him back to life. They're the ones who guided him back to a waking state. And when he came out of his dream, he started making these creatures in papier-mâché. He was what's called a cartonero, somebody who works on paper. And so he started making them. But the first ones that he made were actually quite scary. They were not that attractive. And so the people were not buying them. So he started tweaking them until he got what we today know as the Salebrijes. And so that's the story that we're telling, is sort of that dream and how he ended up in that fever dream. And the name comes from his dream, when he was in his dream. Again, there's multiple stories of this. He says that in the dream, the creatures, as they were guiding him out, they were whispering, "Alebrijes, alebrijes, alebrijes, alebrijes." And so that's where the name comes from. But apparently, if depending on the accounts that you read, in his family, some people say that that was what they used to call things, were like alebrijes. So some people say it was a family word. He says that he heard it in his dream. In the show, while we don't really hear her last name, this is for us to know that his love interest in the show is Alejandra Brijeda, which would be alebrijes. Alejandra Brijeda. But that is, again, for us to know. It's sort of an insider thing to create that this. But he hears this word in his dream. So the one consistent thing is that. And then, as it, you know, we make a reference in the show to Oaxaca. There's a reference made to Oaxaca, because in Oaxaca there was another artist who later, after he made his papier-mâché ones, he started making them out of wood. And so that's the two difference with the two different types of alebrijes. The ones from Mexico City are made out of papier-mâché, and the ones out of Oaxaca are made out of wood.
So it's so fascinating. The alebrijes then comes to life and takes this couple on this magical journey. But it also takes them into sort of this psychedelic Oaxacan jungle, too.
Yes. So basically, again, I'm not trying to give it too much away, but the first part of the show is the magical first beginning, and then we're transported to Mexico City, where we see his relationship with his girlfriend and all these and his animals. So this is all about the spirit guides and his spirit animals. And then in Act Two, we are transported to his dreamland, to his dream world, to his psychedelic dream world. And so that world is represented with lighting, with masks, and puppetry. And so it really creates a heightened, visually stunning environment for the second part of the show.
Well, in case you just joined us, this is Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts, and I'm talking with Roy Arauz of Milagro Theater, and we're talking about Alebrijes, beautiful story, a Dia de Muerto tale, written and directed by Georgina Escobar. The show runs through November 11th and runs Thursdays through Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. All shows are at Milagro Theater. That's located at 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. Find out more at Milagro or visit stageandstudio.org or kabu.fm/stageandstudio. I was just wondering, all the Day of the Dead shows have music and dance. You want to talk a little bit about that? We heard a little bit of the music by Luis Guerra, but tell us more about the celebration part of it.
Absolutely. So, full disclaimer here, Day of the Dead is actually pretty new to me. I'm Costa Rican, And Costa Rica, we don't have the same celebration of Día de Dead in Costa Rica that they do in Mexico. So I am also on a learning curve here. I do know that Milagro has been doing this for 23 years, and the show has evolved. So if your listeners, if you have been coming to Milagro on a regular basis, you will know that the shows have not only necessarily mean evolving, as in better, but just they have changed. They used to be more focused in dance, and then, there's just been an evolution, a changing as depending on what's going on. And in the last few years, they've become a little more scripted. This year, the show is actually quite more scripted. Georgina actually came in with a pretty final script that there were some moments that were devised with the cast. And there's traditions that go with the Day of the Dead. There are certain songs, for example, that are very much associated with the Day of the Dead, like La Llorona, La Cigarra, La Bruja, that most of them are heard in the show. And so you will hear this. And, the thing to remember that's very important with Day of the Dead is that Day of the Dead is an irreverent celebration. It's a celebration of life. I was raised Catholic, and unlike our tradition in Costa Rica of following a very somber memorial to our dead, this is more of a festive memorial to our dead. And so it includes the altars. If people have been visiting us or visiting Mexican restaurants or Mexican locations, you will see, or Mexico, that we have there's altars that are part of the celebration where we basically invite the dead to come and visit us. And so this is all part of a big celebration. And it is an irreverent look at death of, there's a reminder in all of these shows that death happens to all of us. But the death is not something scary. Death is something, one of the things I learned this year, for example, was the reason for the sugar skulls. And the sugar skulls, that is particularly it. They're decorated. They are a reminder that we all die, that we all end up this way. But they're also sweet. And so there's nothing to fear because it's something sweet. And death is something, again, that is a one certainty, right? When you're born is you're going to die. So there's nothing to fear it. The big thing is to honor those that have gone, to remember them fondly, to invite them to come and visit us and to stay in touch with them so that, once you die, you're not gone. You're still part of the fabric of the family and the people that love you.
Well, my connection to Day of the Dead is Milagro Theater because it obviously wasn't part of my culture, but I really appreciate all the cultural aspects that you get from even the exhibits that Milagro does with the altars, in the more of a gallery section of the theater. So all of that helps us to enjoy it. And I'm just wondering from your perspective, also not experiencing this in Costa Rica, when you watch one of these Day of the Dead shows, especially this one, what are your favorite moments? What do you take away from it?
What I take from it, like as I said earlier, is just the fact that death is not something to be afraid of. And that, in a way, not make fun of death, but we sort of do. We sort of stick our tongue out. But at the same time, there's a respect for death. So in Mexican, artists in artistry, you have La Catrina and El Catrín, which are the skeletons that are very highly, they dress very well and they have hats, and because they represent rich people, because rich people, we all end up in the same place. And so I think part of my favorite thing is always that moment when you first see the death, or you first see those moments, that awareness, that celebration of being alive, because as we celebrate death, we celebrate our life and we celebrate our being here and the importance of that.
It just sounds like a fabulous show. Milagro Theater presents Alebrijes, directed by Georgina Escobar, runs through November 11th. Show dates are Thursday through Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. All shows are at Milagro Theater, located at 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. And tickets are available at milagro.org or by calling 503-236-7253. That's 503-236-7253. And I have all that info at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. I'm going to take a little short break right now. We're going to listen to more music from the show by Luis Guerra. Thank you. I'm Demi Roberts, stage and studio, and I'm here with, in my office studio on location, with producing creative director Roy Arauz of Milagro Theater. And we're going to talk actually about the whole season. Now, Milagro's 35th season, the theme is fantasy, fairy tales, and folklore. Ha! Would you do a brief rundown of the rest of your season, starting with, this sounds fascinating, Judge Torres in January?
Absolutely. So Judge Torres is based on the life of Xiomara Torres. It is written by Milta Ortiz. And so who Judge Torres is, she's one of the first, I think she's the third Latino judge in Multnomah County. And basically she has, the show shows her life from immigrating from El Salvador. We call her here a Me Too dreamer. And the thing is, the story is being told because, you know, following the theme of the season, the story is being told through the lens of folklore, adding a lot of the traditions and legends of El Salvador. And one of the stories that they're using to heighten this, as far as I know, again, it's all being written, is La Siwanaba is going to play a big role in this. La Siwanaba is a very similar legend to La Segua, which is the play that follows it. So the themes are close to what we do. Judge Torres is the launch of the national tour of this particular piece. So as part of Milagro, we have our touring company is Teatro Milagro. Teatro Milagro tours nationally to colleges and universities. And this year, the show usually launches in January from our main stage. We have 2 weeks performances, and then it goes on again on a national tour. So this show will be touring at a national level, so we're very excited about it.
Well, let's jump ahead then to Jump. You're directing a show in February, right? Oh, no, that's in March. So what's the show you were referencing, actually, was sort of a sequel that you're directing in March?
Yes. Well, so I'm directing La Segua in February. La Segua is a Costa Rican play. It's considered by many one of our most valued, one of our most treasured pieces of literature, especially when it comes to theater. It was written by Alberto Cañas Escalante, Don Alberto, or Don Beto, like he was called in Costa Rica affectionately. He did everything. He was a politician, he was a reporter, and he was an artist. He was the first minister of culture in Costa Rica, and he is also the founder of the National Theater Company. And so during that time, he wrote this play, La Segua. It was originally written and featured as the culmination of a Central American theater festival. And that's how it started. So it has a cast of, I think, 30 people, 30 named characters that come in and go. And while we're not telling the story of La Segua herself, this is another story that is framed around the tale of La Segua and her presence. And ultimately, what the show is about is about beauty and the pressure society puts, especially on women, to be quote unquote beautiful. And as one of the actors that I workshopped the show with a few years ago in New York, she said, the show puts the light on our appreciation for young beauty as opposed to older beauty. And why is that, right? Why don't we appreciate beauty at 50? We only appreciate beauty in your 20s. And so that is La Segua.
And we're going to now jump ahead to a co-production with Confrontation Theater called Jump in March.
Yes, we're very excited about this show, written by Charlie Yvonne Simpson. Jose Gonzalez, executive director of Milagro, first saw it at last year's showcase by the National New Play Network. And because of the themes of the show, we felt that it was very important that we wanted to produce it, we wanted to produce it with an African American company, and so we got in touch with Latevin and the whole group of Confrontation Theater, and so we are co-producing the show with them. The big importance of the show is that it deals with issues of mental health in communities of color, and that is one of, you know, the taboo subjects that I know, at least in Latin America, we don't really talk about mental health issues. You know, you're always told, just deal with it, just get better. And so it deals with those issues. And so it is a beautiful, beautifully written play. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what it is. And as I mentioned, this is one of two National Nuclear Network Rolling World premieres that we're producing this season.
So, mental health is also a taboo subject in the Asian American Pacific Islander community, too. It's like, you know, I don't know why, but we just, you know, it is often taboo, so it's great that you're addressing that. And the season closes at Milagro Theater with Wolf at the Door, and that's in May, and it's directed by Rebecca Martinez. So tell us more. I'm excited that Rebecca's coming back, for one thing, but tell us more about that.
So Wolf at the Door is, like you said, directed by Rebecca Martinez, written by Maricela Treviño Horta, and it is our second Rolling World premiere of the year. It is, again, following in the themes of the season. Maricela calls it a grim Latino fairy tale. So yes, it's a fairy tale, but it's not a fairy tale in your Disney version of fairy tales. It is a fairy tale in the way they were written in the 1700s and 1800s, with a strong moral, but it's also just kind of very, very dark, and it doesn't really keep anything. It's not sanitized in any way. Yeah, that's it, the play is pretty magical. It is just so well written. Maricela was a poet before she became a playwright, so a lot of that language comes through in her words, even though she also makes it clear that her play is not to be treated as poetry, that the words are not to be treated preciously. We are the third stop of this Rolling World premiere.
You want to explain to our listeners what a Rolling World premiere is?
Absolutely. So there is an organization in the United States called the National New Play Network, and their goal is to promote the development of new works in the United States. Part of this, one of the problems that we've had in the United States with new works is what you call in theater circles world premiereitis. Every theater wants to do a world premiere, right? But once the world premiere happens, the show, whether it's successful or not, doesn't have the legs or the strength for other theaters regionally to look at the play and want to do it. If it's had one production, there's one set of reviews and that's it. And so what they've been doing, and then this is the National New Play Network signature project, is the Rolling World Premiere. At least three theaters commit to producing a show independently from each other. So these are three or four independent productions that happen within the course of a year. So the last play has to close a year, at most a year after the other play started rehearsal. So everything has to happen within a year. And what it does is it gives the play, legs. So, for example, last year we did the Rolling World premiere of The Mermaid Hour. There were four stops of the world premiere. And so the play had a show in New Mexico. We had here in Seattle, Minneapolis, and North Carolina. And so right there, the show is guaranteed from the very beginning, from its world premiere, four productions. And so now the play has legs. Now people all across the country have been hearing it. Now people have been reading reviews about it, and now people are excited about it. And so it just helps light that fire. And many playwrights are elevated because of that Rolling World premiere, and because now people like see the play. Now they know, you know, the one playwright I can think of at the top of my head right now is Lauren Gunderson. I mean, if you say Lauren Gunderson, she's become a household name. I worked in one of her early plays before, you know, she was so well known. And then one of her plays, the playwright after that got selected for a Rolling World premiere. And I'm not going to say exclusively that's the reason she's so famous, so well known and so produced. But I do think that there is a lot to say that it's what creates that interest. Once a play reaches that critical mass of being produced in multiple plays at the same time, then it gives it those legs. So that is what a Rolling World premiere is.
Well, that's wonderful for the playwright. I mean, that's a win-win, definitely. What are the other, the other premieres that are happening along with Milagros? Do you know where they are? Getting out his computer to take a look, folks. You don't have to say. It's okay.
No. I would love to tell you, let's see, for Wolf at the Door, Wolf at the Door just opened at New Jersey Rep. It opened and it got great reviews. We're one of four theaters producing it. The other theaters, again, are New Jersey Repertory Theater Company, Kitchen Dog Theater in Dallas, Texas, and Halcyon Theater in Chicago, Illinois. And with Jump, there's three theaters producing Jump. In addition to Milagro Confrontation Theater, you have Playmakers Repertory Company in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and Actors Express in Atlanta, Georgia. So again, these shows are going to have all this exposure within a year's time, and hopefully that will help propel the plays to the mainstream.
Does it help the theater company as well to get more well-known across the country?
I hope so. You know, Milagro, so the National New Play Network, the way it works, not any theater can be a part of this. So you have to be a member of the National New Play Network. And there are levels to be members. So you can be a core member and you can be an associate member. And so to have a national Rolling World premiere, you have to have at least two core member theaters participating in the Rolling World premiere. And so, Milagro is a Rolling World premiere. We're usually one of those two companies. And I hope that because of the national recognition that the plays get, because they're being produced in more than one city, that we all lift each other up into, again, more of a consciousness.
So any other final words about the whole season, actually? Because I noticed you have a lot of the playwrights are women of color.
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things that it wasn't by design, but one of the things that we saw that really excites us is that this season we have five plays all by people of color. Outside of La Segua, which is written by a man, we are presenting four world premieres written by women of color, three Latinas and an African American. And in addition to that, all directors this season are people of color. In other seasons, we've had directors, you know, white directors, and this season, all five directors are people of color. So I think that is a rather significant achievement for our season.
You want to do a final shout out for the Day of the Dead show?
Sure, come see Alebrijes. It is a brilliant, beautiful, magical show with lots of color and lots of fun, and it's good for the whole family. Children five and up are more than welcome to come.
Well, a full busy season at Milagro Theater, and you can find out more about their season or get tickets to their Day of the Dead show, Alebrijes, by visiting milagro.org or by calling 503-236-7253. Roy Arauz, producing creative director of Milagro Theater, thank you for joining me here at my office studio today, and I hope you have a great run and a great season.
Thank you, Dime. Thank you for having us.
So that's it for Stage and Studio this week. I'll have the show online at stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio, as well as on iTunes, and you can like us on facebook.com/stageandstudio. And till next time, I'm Dime Roberts. We're going out, though, with some music from Gospel Blues by Wayne Harrell, Dave Fleshner, and the late Janice Scroggins. The show, Concert Reading and Musical Performance, which is a show honoring the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr.'s death, is starring Alonzo Chadwick and is directed by Josie Seed. And there are two shows only, October 26th at 7:30 p.m. at West Hills Covenant Church and October 27th at 7:30 p.m. at Maranatha Church, both in Portland. More info at gospelbluesmusical.com. This song is called Stayed on Freedom.
It was a Chelsea morning, and the first thing that I heard was a song outside my window.
Help me, I think I'm falling in love again.
California, coming home.
Blue. Hi, I'm Ed Melnick, your host for the singer-songwriter edition of the Monday Sampler. Joni Mitchell, winner of 9 Grammy Awards, is one of the most revered singer-songwriters in the last 50 years. In celebration of Joni Mitchell's 75th birthday, I've put together a special program featuring some of her known and not-so-well-known music. I hope you'll join me Monday, November 5th, from 2 to 4. Let's celebrate Joni's birthday together.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Jeff Yarn. He's the publisher and chief critic at Port, which is a website about art, and it's at portlandart.net. Thanks for coming back to KBOO.
Thanks for having me, Joseph.
So, Jeff, you have a big essay you've written, and it's coming out very soon. It's called Portlandageddon. How long is it, and when is it out?
It's thousands and thousands of words with lots of images, and it comes out Tuesday morning.
How long have you been working on this?
I've been working it on and off and on for a couple of years, actually. Every time I think I'm done, a new thing seems to happen in Portland that turns the scene over. It's this major sea change. And I've been kind of waiting for the right time to take stock of the entire corpus or the entire body of health of the art scene here, and because so many changes have occurred. And I just got back from traveling the Midwest, and actually it's a great time to just finish it off and push it out because we're nearing towards the end of the year, kind of home stretch, and it's a good time to take stock of things because it's just going to keep changing even more.
Mm-hmm. Geddon, it sounds kind of apocalyptic, like there might be some destruction involved. What's going on?
Well, Picasso had a great quote, which is, every act of creation is also an act of destruction. And to be sure, Portland has been changing tremendously, especially within the last like 6 years or so. I'm part of the wave that moved here in the end of the 20th century, just before the Y2K thing. And a lot of artists decamped here in Portland and decided that this was going to be an art city, whether it knew it or not, because we were moving here and this was the kind of program that we were going to install in the city. And a lot of people gave a lot of pushback at first, and I was kind of the voice of this horde of artists that were moving to Portland. And at least one of the most